Everybody knows we got a bit backlogged last year with being short-staffed and having a number of high-priority projects going through the benefits division that that we fell a bit behind. Thankfully, we have a person with us, and I think we introduced her during the December meeting, but I don't think you could see her face at that time. So Jillian Knapp is our new benefits specialist that's with us, and she's taking over the minutes. So she's going to be helping us get caught up on those. And our approach is going to be stop the bleeding. So you know, any new meetings, you know, we're going to prioritize those to get those complete, and then go back to those older meetings to summarize those as we can.
Thanks, Jason, and welcome, Jillian.
And Billy, if you want to handle attendance, that'd be great.
Okay, so these are the people I'm not seeing yet. So if I call your name and you've just popped in, say hey, and I'll mark you off. I'm not seeing Christy Durham yet. Robert Skinner, David Soam, or Fred Youngbluth. Seeing everybody else.
Yeah, and Bob may be out. That was something I heard, so we'll see.
Okay. And so we're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. One person short of a quorum.
Okay.
But once Christy finishes up what she's doing, I'm sure she'll pop in and we'll have it.
Great.
Oh, I said, oh, hi, Rochelle, I got you.
Great. Okay. Anything else about attendance then?
Attendance, no.
Okay. All right. So that does kind of segue into the next topic, which is BRC membership changes. We have some transitions and probably new folks coming in.
Okay. So Jenny Helms, who was representing the command staff at the sheriff's office, left. And she is being replaced by Nancy Artman, also Sheriff's Office Command Staff, and Nancy will be with us next month. We're getting her onboarded. Krista Bosserman-Wolf left the county, and so whoever is hired to replace her position will fill her position on the BRC as well. So as soon as that person is hired, then they will be onboarded and added to the committee. Jason Kirkpatrick also left the county and is being replaced by Lauren Haney, who might be joining us later today, if not next month for sure. There was one representative position that went unfilled last year. I reached out to that group, and they indicated they were planning to refill that position, so in anticipation of that, we will be refilling the non-rep position that went with it as well. We're waiting to hear from the supervisor that we reached out to with two of their potential reports that we thought would be great for the committee, so we're waiting to hear back. So that one's being recruited as well, and yeah, we're just waiting to hear back.
Great.
Billy, who was the first one, sorry, that you said? I didn't hear the name completely.
Nancy Artman?
No.
Krista Wasserman-Wolf is the one who left.
Jenny Helms had left, and her replacement was Nancy Artman.
Is that what you were asking?
You said Krista, was that right?
Krista also left.
Okay, that's the one I didn't hear. Sorry,
that's
the one.
Okay. Yeah.
So it sounds like we'll have some new folks to BRC, but not only new to BRC, but then also new to the county. So a lot of learning on their feet. So we'll be patient with them.
just one new person to the county. The others already work here.
Okay, great. Okay.
Billy, what's the division that we're looking for a representative member in?
Housing Authority.
Housing Authority, okay.
Yeah, Gary Knepper's position was never replaced.
That's right.
He left.
All right. Any other questions about membership changes? We welcome all of you who are here. as we start a new year. And it seems early to me, but Jason was informing me we usually try to start in February, so maybe it's just this year. It seems early, and we're jumping right into it. All right. So then the next piece on the agenda is the Q4 experience report. And my understanding is that Alyssa is going to be sharing that. Is that correct?
Yes. So hi, everyone. I've been kind of sitting in the background on a lot of the BRC meetings last year. I am one third of the Mercer team. So I know you all usually see Joe present experience. He actually has to drive somewhere today. Some people are meeting in person again. So I'll be sharing the Q4 experience. And this is in the handouts. If you have any questions, I'll do my best, of course, to answer them. But we can also follow up if any additional information is needed. Sounds like most of the new BRC members are not here. So I'm guessing a lot of you have seen these slides before. But I'll try to go slow and kind of call out the key things that we're looking at. So this is January through December experience for just the general county plans. And I apologize, my screen is right here, so you're going to see the side of my face. So overall, the medical plan ran really well at 89.5% of budget. So the county ended the year with a surplus on the medical plans. And the cost for 2021 was higher on a per employee per month basis, but that is to be expected with COVID suppressing 2020 claims. The dental plan was also running well at 86.9% of budget, and then vision was running at 79.9%. And just as kind of like a overview of where, like if that's good or bad, so on the self-funded plans, we're looking at like 90 to 100% of budget at the end of the year. So we set aside the budget rates, and that's how much the county sets aside to pay claims on the self-funded plan. For fully insured, like the Kaiser plans, when you pay Kaiser, they expect to make at least a little profit to cover their and cover their administrative expenses. So for fully insured plans, we're thinking like 85% is usually pretty good. So numbers are looking really good, which led to a pretty good renewal for 2022, which is why you saw like good numbers for 2022. So this is another way to look at it. So the percent of budget is also called the loss ratio. So for every $100 the county budgeted, $89.50 were spent. So that's the 89.5% loss ratio, which led to the $2 million surplus. There were 920 employees enrolled on the self-funded plan. So again, this isn't covering the Kaiser plans. And then just looking at the costs year over year, and then a rolling 12 months, which when we're looking at it for the full plan year, it's just the same as year over year. So those costs are increased, but again, to be expected because everything was so suppressed with COVID in 2020. Are there any questions on this slide? So looking at the same numbers for dental, the 86.9% loss ratio with about a $300,000 surplus. And then the per employee per month costs had a pretty significant increase, which really of anything that was suppressed by COVID, dental was a huge one. So that's been built in, like as we've done projections, that's why the loss ratio is still really good because we expected claims to rebound from COVID. And then vision, an 80% loss ratio, nothing huge to note here. Things are looking good. And then you actually had a little bit of a decrease in the per employee per month paid premium. So your vision plan is fully insured, I believe, which is so you don't get to retain the money that you sent to the carrier. So the next slide, The next slides are a lot to look at, but it's helpful to compare prior years to the current year. So just I'll go through the columns across the top, and then this portion right here is kind of what is a key area to look at. But if you have any questions as you're like looking at it in more detail, if you like to do that sort of thing, we can always answer questions. So the paid claims are what the county pays to providers each month based off of what utilization there is. So then the county also has something called stop loss. So at 200, any person who has a claim that exceeds $200,000, the county is reimbursed by the stop loss insurance. It's really important. I just heard of a claim, not for the county, but a COVID claim that was $15 million, which as you can see, that's like almost the entire year budget for the county. So the stop loss is really important because that would be like a $15 million reimbursement. So I believe that you might have increased stop loss for 2023, but you can see here in total in 2021, $1.5 million of reimbursement to the county from the stop loss carrier. You also get back some money called RX rebates. So there are certain programs where you get refunds on money that's spent on pharmacy. Then we have some room for adjustments, your fixed costs. So we pay these to Providence for administering the plan. And then that totals the gross plan cost, which is compared to the budget, and that gives you that loss ratio. And there you'll see like 114% in April, but then there was a really big stop loss reimbursement the next month. There's kind of a lag in medical care or in claims and when they're reimbursed. So overall, the per employee per month cost you can see over here increased 4.4%. Then there's some additional detail on the fixed cost. So there's that stop loss. That's how much you paid to the carrier. So $1.42 million was paid to the stop loss company. And then it's broken down by plan. I won't go really into detail on this. The personal option plan has the highest enrollment. And then open option, of course, is close behind. Sorry, my computer is a little slow clicking through. They'll skip like 8 slides at once. And then large claimants. So this is that $1.5 million in stop loss reimbursement. You can see what plan and the type of claimant. So a couple of children were the top ones. And these are important to kind of monitor because some things are ongoing and will affect rates going forward. And then some things are one-time instances, like a hemophiliac, that's like $600,000 a year. So you can expect that to reoccur year over year over year. And then dental is a bit simpler. Oops. So dental is a bit simpler, not a lot. There's no stop loss. Dental claims aren't super high. Of course, there's those annual maximums, so you kind of know what to expect. But 16.5% increase year over year on dental as well. And then broken down by plan. And then the same thing for vision. So if you're a numbers person, it's shown a lot of different ways. If you're not a numbers person, I think those first few slides that are just the big blue graphs are kind of helpful to see. But really the key pieces are the plans ran really well in 2021. And then we expect, fingers crossed, that everything will go well in 2022 as well and lead to just good increases, good low increases all around. Any questions on the experience? Oh, Christy, I see you have your hand raised.
Thanks. I just was wondering on the large claims, if we can just flip back to that. One of the things that I'm interested in is, based on our claims, do you see some of those? And I know that there's a very large claim, Keith, that we're still waiting for that to hit, and it's, what, 3-4 million? I forget. We haven't seen it hit yet. So
I think it's the one at the top. there.
That's the beginning of it then?
Yeah.
Then the rest of it?
Then there's probably going to be some carryover on it.
Okay. Yeah, so
that's,
there was...
That's the one that I recall. That,
okay. I just know that there's, yeah, there's, I can't remember, $3 or $4 million in claim coming through. So we just haven't seen it. So still wait. Every week we wait for that big number to come in. So
Chrissy, this is looking back.
This is last year, but I'm not sure where that will show up.
Since it's so big, too, it takes a little bit longer because they're double-checking all the charges on it to make sure that they're appropriate for what it is. So it takes probably a little bit longer on that.
Okay. So is that one, so just kind of taking a look at this, I know one of the things that we've looked at historically is getting a sense of some of these things that there's really nothing that we can really do much about. But there are some things that might be interesting to us. We might see some as we're just kicking off the beginning of this BRC new year. Just wondering if there's anything here that we see as something we should be beginning to think about, any trends or things that we start thinking early on.
You know, asking me or the committee?
You. And okay. Alyssa, based on these large claims, it's just usually something we talk about here.
Yeah, lots of cancers, unfortunately. I mean, that's kind of been what I recall historically with the county and having larger claims, a lot of cancer claims, unfortunately. A couple in here, like I look at the Crohn's and the psoriatic arthritis ones, I'd see those claim amounts. And I would assume or think that they are also taking some of the new biosimilar drugs to help with those causes. So that's something to, you know, just look at that could get some of those costs under control if they're not already on those regimens. And maybe they are, and that's the best it controls at that point. But that's something I'd look at. Other than that, you know, the chronic pain syndrome, that's kind of an interesting one to see what that would be about. But a lot of these, what's really interesting, you're seeing, look, you've got three psoriasis claims in your top, or four, five, actually, which that stands out to me.
It's really
that's
unusual.
Rare.
I don't ever even see them on the large claims. What's going on there? Are there new biosimilar RX interventions?
That's what kind of gets me on this. That's what stands out to me is why would we have these claim amounts unless it's due to those drug charges.
I was just thinking that Stelara is used to treat psoriasis, and whenever you see like high cost of drug lists, that's on there oftentimes. So I would think it might be Stelara.
So that's what I'm wondering, if these are just claim dollars or if this is also includes RX in here. But in any event, the Stelaras, the Humiras, I mean, Humira made obscene amounts of money last year. There is an article out that I just sent to another client about this, but you'd think with all the biosimilars that are out there competing in the same space that you'd see some drop in those prices, but they're all expensive, and it's because they're all still under their patents on it. But the good news is that there's so many of them, there's more options than they've had before. And a lot of times with this condition, there's also associated behavioral health issues and other things. So it's just good that there is more treatment available to people. And a lot of these drugs don't just treat psoriasis, they treat Crohn's disease and other ones. So they have multi-use. And that's also another positive. I think in the next few years, we're going to see some drop in that, but to Alyssa's point, they're all very expensive, and they all run quite a bit. They have, and also when they're advertising financial assistance, that tells you something as well about the drug. So but that's, to answer your questions, Chrissy, that's something I think we look at and say, okay, why do we have so many? Because that just pops out to me right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for all the BRC members who maybe don't look at high cost lists and drug claims all the time, pharmacy, as you may know, is just super expensive and it trends at a much higher rate than medical care, which of course trends even higher than like inflation and other things. And pharmacy can make up like 25% of medical spend, even though you would think it's such a small piece and it, you would think other things would cover it. So it's definitely something Mercer's keeping an eye on. And there's new developments, but pharmacy is very expensive.
Yeah, we'll be looking at, there's new gene therapy drugs coming out, a couple right now that we're doing certain things to guard against the high cost of those. We actually did have a client last year that incurred one of them, and just for one of those drugs, it was $2 million. So they're all going to be really expensive when they come out, but they're all game changers and life-saving as well, or quality of life improvement. So again, while it's expensive, there's positives, and it's that's what it's there for, is to help improve quality of life and save lives.
It just makes me think, and I agree with all of that, and it makes me think as we are going forward that one of the things I'd like to hear more about, Keith and Alyssa, is just what are the things we should be looking at to ensure that we have some of those tools and that we have visibility. I know you all are watching this. I know Providence is watching, but I'd like us to also be able to have those kind of guardrails that you're using in making those evaluations so that we have that as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And the stop loss carriers too, because it impacts your stop loss. So we have those in place. Some of it's fairly new, just to be honest, and they're trying to keep pace with it. So we'll need to talk to Providence about Providence and RGA, which is your stop loss carrier, about protecting against some of those gene therapy drugs that are high cost. Now, the odds of using them, I want to caveat that, are remote, but it happens. And we just talked about having had a claim for a client last year on it. So it's something to weigh and consider, and we've been having those conversations recently with clients.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? We'll try to track. If you're not able to speak up, you can also use the chat to pass on questions. Just a reminder. Okay, I'm not seeing anything though. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Alyssa. And the next item on the agenda, as you see, is the BRC work plan for 2022. All right. Yep. And that also is Mercer.
Okay. So this is our annual work plan that we put together. It's an outline. It doesn't deviate that much year to year, but it gives all of you an idea as to what we'll be talking about doing throughout the year. The biggest thing, and probably something we want to talk about now, is April's going to be fast upon us, and that's when we normally have vendor presentations for their utilization reports. And so I guess we want to have feedback, Christy and committee, if you want to continue those as we've done all along in the past, hear from the same people, scale some of it down or keep it as is. We just need to know so that we can go out to the carriers, let them know well in advance so that they're prepared to present. What we show here is how we did it last year. We split it, and being remote, that seemed like a good way to do it. And we had the medical carriers present first, followed up by Delta Dental and VSP. And if you'd like to keep it the same, that's great. We just need to know what the preference is so that we can prep the carriers and give them plenty of lead time to do so.
I think it worked well. Does anybody else? I think it's vital to the work that we do here to hear from them. What did you all think? We had tried before to condense it all into one meeting just in the interest of time, or do you prefer, looks like David prefers, may prefer, the two sessions. Do we have a preference here?
I like separating them.
Everybody kind of agree with that? Any different opinion there?
Chris, you raised your hand for a moment there.
I was actually just looking for thumbs up. I hit the wrong thing, but I'm good with the way it says on the schedule.
Okay. If anybody does have a proposal to shift around, please let us know. That can be a process proposal, so not necessarily a formal proposal. Okay.
So with that, hearing no objections, we will proceed as we did last year and let the chairs know. So that's probably the biggest thing coming up. Around June, again, we'll be looking at forecasting what the renewal will look like, discussing if there's any type of plan changes, priorities around that. And then in July, we'll really start getting into what the meat of the renewal will look like. And then in August, as you're used to and aware, we'll go through carrier contract changes, the contribution calculations, the full renewal. And if all goes well, we may not need to have all those meetings, but we always set aside weekly meetings during that August timeframe in case there is a difficult renewal and we need to work through things. A few of you that are on this call, Chris, you've certainly been through it before where we've had to do that. So hopefully we won't this year. And so that's really it. And then we go through approval in September, hopefully earlier, because it's earlier is better. We give the carriers more time to do that. And I'd probably say, too, that it's late. Hopefully I'll have it by August, but sometimes Providence won't know final contract changes until that October timeframe, maybe September, late September. So we always kind of leave that open and maybe discuss those at that time. We'll have a preliminary, you'll kind of know what it is, but they're all beholden to the state in their timeline when they finalize those contract changes.
I wonder if we should throw something out there on this work plan just that recognizes that, because it is every year, and then we have to kind of reconvene, and we often will make a decision that we could make a change back depending on what we hear back on those contract changes.
Yeah, so probably down in that slot where we have open enrollment is where I'm going to add to it.
The timing is not optimal, right? It's like everything is published, everything is done, and we're really not likely to totally change everything, right?
No, I mean, usually we don't, but process. Sometimes there's just final clarifications that need to come through, and promises on top of it that they just have to wait.
Right, exactly. Which is just one of those conflicts in our timeline, but just to have that as a visible piece for us.
Yeah. So, Christy, just to be clear, are you proposing a different day meeting or just go along with
it? I'm just saying add it in here, because what we end up doing is we convene virtually. Now it's even easier because we're all used to doing this, but we just have a little asterisk in our decisions in August.
Yeah.
You know, potentially. So we're moving forward, but it's just to let people who may be new to the group here, we just call it out. Everybody is aware.
Yes.
Mercer, yeah. Everybody's going to just need to know that we'll have most likely one more meeting after we've finished and celebrated. So. Yeah. Maybe we have pizza or do something fun. And then, no, I'm just kidding.
We used to, a long time ago, we used to have lunch. All right.
Speaking of that, I mean, you just kind of mentioned it, and maybe that's a topic for later. Has there been any discussion? I haven't seen it on the notices that I get from Clackamas County. Has there been any discussion about having in-person meetings or BRC meetings again, or is that pulled off to the future and has yet to be addressed?
I think it's just as it has been for the last 2 years, emerging, shifting sands. I know that the BCC had reopened all their meetings to public meetings, and anytime I was there to present, we'd always have to show up in person. That's changed. They went back to all virtual meetings. I think that it's just, if this is working for us virtually, honestly, if it works well for us, and this is a model we want to be able to continue with because it minimizes work disruptions, commuting, whatever it is. And maybe we just have that as part of our process check as well. So HR, we have our all staff meetings every month in person, and they're required that we're all here on site in person. I'm open to on-site meetings. I think I just would kick that over to the committee to say, where are we and when are we feeling like an in-person meeting would be happening?
Yeah, and that was probably an ongoing conversation. Others want to add to that?
I mean, I personally, like when it comes time to these reviews where we're looking at all the numbers, I like doing those in person because I like looking hands-on, kind of going line by line. And sometimes when I'm looking at the screen, I just kind of zone out because all the numbers jumble together. So I like those in person.
I would concur. I think it creates a more collaborative, process if we're meeting in person. Some of you know, years ago, we used to work through things on big post-it note sheets and hang options around the room and be able to do our straw polls with colored dots, and it just seemed like a more collaborative experience. So I would vote to move us back in the same room at some point if we can get to that.
Okay. I see Jennifer added a comment that Zoom meetings work really well for those of us not located on Red Soil's campus. Yes, because people are disparate. I know my office is going mostly from home, although I'm myself am flexible. So,
with that said, I'd love to meet everybody and see the process before COVID, because I didn't get to participate in that.
So yeah, so a good opportunity. So maybe a hybrid process. Other folks,
I love the idea of a hybrid process, though, Corey, because you know. It's just more inclusive for different needs of different members. So I agree, Chris. I actually love the on-site meetings. I'm on-site every day. That's me. I really enjoy it. But just to be able to open the opportunities for people, in that room, we have, what are they called, the owl? Anybody of you know, it's basically a camera that just rotates around and follows the speaker. It's not perfect. But there's definitely a way to expand availability. Sometimes that might be a good option. So
this may be something to think about in the group, and likely would require a formal motion, I would imagine, to think about in terms of our process. But anyway, you might want to think about a proposal and how this would look in future meetings. Something to consider. Anything else on that point or on the work plan in general?
I have one other thing on the work plan. We got some feedback from a couple members about the first June meeting and the first July meeting. Now, historically, we've had the early June and the early July meeting I want to say like 2 or 3 years on our schedules. And those meetings have really been there for the purpose of, if we need them, we'll use them. Because I think out of the times that we've had those meetings on the schedule, we've actually only used the June meeting once, and we've never had to use the early July meeting. Because we're usually at that point we're ready to get those renewals and start looking at some things, but we don't get those renewals until a little bit later in July, and so the question from the individuals who brought it up was does it make sense that we have those meetings on there? Are people even going to be around for those meetings? Because both of them happen to be holiday weeks. I think the first one's Memorial Day, if I remember right. Oh, yeah. And then the July one, of course, July 4th. I'm just kind of curious to, I guess, maybe hear people's perspective on that. Is it valuable to keep those on there as let's keep them if we need them, or do we have enough people that are just saying, hey, I'm not going to be around that week, there's no point even having them on the calendar.
I think we're going to have problems getting a quorum.
Yeah. Your voting process, yeah.
That's true, yeah. Anybody else with any other perspectives on that?
I hesitate saying let's take them off the agenda in case we can be productive and if there's reasons for us to meet. We can always cancel later, I suppose, or is it because we're on a every other week schedule in there? Is there a reason that we couldn't maybe shift it by a week? And, you know, basically what it would do then is at the end of July, we'd be right into, you know, the last July meeting and then four meetings in August.
Yeah, we'd have essentially five meetings back to back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Up to five. Yeah, and I think we did do that 1 year. I think we had to do that, you know, shift the meetings around a little bit, you know, just because of how the timing worked out.
Yeah.
Thank you on that. Thank you for that, Chris.
So to be clear, one option would be to shift the July 2nd or June 2nd to June 9th, for instance. Would that be your proposal or your idea? And then...
Yes, that's what I was getting at. Just bump June's dates out a week and July's out a week, but knowing that that would put us with five meetings in a row, but assuming as well that we would need all five meetings. There could be a situation where we're done the middle of August as well, and we don't need that last meeting.
But yeah, so that's bumping both of them out, keeping the 2 weeks between them, though.
Yeah.
I like that idea, because if we don't need them, we don't need them. But we might just put them on here as optional. And maybe it's just, you know, I'm just thinking after we've heard from the vendors that we want time to get that information and hear back from them, and so bumping it out a week gives the vendors a little bit more time. By then, Providence and Kaiser should have everything, but we might have wanted some additional bits of information we could send back to them. But I think that the 2 weeks in those months, I'd actually like to see us use them a little bit more by doing that ask of the vendors. What about this? Show us how many plan participants experienced situation X. Really trying to uncover more plan specific information earlier.
All right, so what I'm hearing then, unless anybody disagrees, is that we're looking at instead of meeting June 2nd and June 16th, going with June 9th and June 23rd. And then instead of July 7th and July 21st, going with July 14th and July 28th. Right. I don't hear any objections, so I can make the adjustments on the everybody's Outlook invites for that.
I wonder if we would add on something, though, about reviewing vendor data. So we're talking about clarifying. Oh, is that the targeted plan inquiries? Is that what it is? Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I see is that a thumbs up for Melissa?
Thank you all for your feedback on that.
Okay, thank you. That's an arrow up. I'm not sure what that is, Melissa. Sorry to call you out. Okay. All right, thank you. All right. Let's see. Okay, and I, one of the things that that David mentioned was that the question about a quorum. It looks like Ed is left, so we may not have a quorum for voting. Just so we will be aware. I don't know if that's true, but we may not have because Ed had to leave at 2. He said. So, Billy, maybe you can track that, but I just wanted to point that out just in case. All right. Oh, it's actually time for a break. Now that I'm looking at the agenda, 2:25. We're actually a little bit early. So we could take a break for 10 minutes as suggested, or we could move forward and potentially end early. Any suggestions or requests to that end?
We actually do have one thing left on the agenda before the break. We have the reviewing the 2022 renewal priorities, just kind of reflecting on those and saying, you know, what did we accomplish? Do we still need to address any of these 2022 priorities and bring them up to 2023? So that's, yeah, sorry.
Thank
just wanted
you.
To make sure you knew that was on there.
Thank you. I glanced over it, so thank you for pointing that out.
And we're still good as far as the quorum.
Oh, good. Excellent. Okay. So who wants to lead that conversation about the priorities? Okay. We can look at the bottom here. Jason's pointing out the final 2022 plan year renewal priorities.
Well, I'd love to add just one thing, and it's not quite here. It's somewhere in this part of the conversation. We made plan design changes last year, and so I don't know if they show up here or if it's when we're talking about those 2023 renewal priorities, but somewhere in here I'd like to make sure that when we made those changes, we're looking to see how well are they working or do we know enough. We're not going to know that right now because they just happened, but...
So a look back to see how the design plan changes affect.
Maybe, or just a placeholder that when we make plan design changes, that should become kind of part of our data requests back to the carriers, knowing that it takes time to develop that enough for them to even report out on. It won't probably be, you know, well, it's likely that we won't be able to do anything about it in this renewal period because it's going to take time to develop the claims history to tell us were those the right visit limits that we put on there, or are we running people up against a limit and they're no longer able to access care, which wasn't our intention. So just wondering where it fits, because it takes more time to get that information. And I don't know, Keith, maybe you have some ideas on that and we can talk about that later, but just wanted to touch base on that. And then the vision as well, just whatever.
As a reminder for folks who are probably all tracking what Christy's talking about, we did make some changes to the alternative care allotments and also to vision, to the vision care. So, all right.
So, yeah, I guess on that note, you know, when we look back at the 2022 plan renewal priorities, you know, that was, you know, we addressed that first one with those, you know, previous plan design changes that you just mentioned for this 2022, January 2022. We explored the utilization costs and options associated with contact lenses and or eyeglasses benefits, and decided to make a change in the allowance to the providence plans for eyeglasses. And then there's another one down here, the Explore Vision Therapy benefit options, that we actually added that coverage as well to the benefits. But yeah, I don't know how people want to do this. If you want me to just kind of read it, we just got to talk about if this is something that we want to continue to keep on here. I guess we'll start with that approach. So the next priority was to work with Mercer and the medical plan carriers to understand the practicality associated with plan changes to improve access to continuous glucose monitors for diabetic plan members. I'm not sure that we addressed that. Any thoughts on that? Is that something we want to continue to work towards?
I think so.
I think it'd be really interesting to look at the vendor presentations in light of some of these, right? Those are
those are definitely driving factors to claims and quality of life for people and access to care. So
thank you both. So Mercer, I hope you're taking notes on, you know, what we want to hear from the
referring mostly to the Libre type of monitors. Is that what we're talking about here, the ones that they wear on their arm the entire time, is just so that we're clear on this?
I don't remember whose proposal this was.
Maybe we just do it a little broader, that it's, you know, looking at that controlling diabetes as a chronic condition, that there could be, you know, because the identifying care resources, and then, you know, adding coverage.
There's all kinds of resources. There shouldn't be a problem to access to glucose monitors at all, other than the more expensive ones that are worn all the time, I was just describing. And then, and they do have diabetic support programs. A lot of it, as they'll say time and time again, is to go and register on a website, and then they have the programs there and enroll. So a lot of it's communication, reiterating what's available, and doing that. But I think, if I recall correctly, it was having more access to those more expensive,
I think that's correct.
Monitors.
Yeah, I think that is correct. Yeah, it's making those more affordable for people who wish to go that route.
Yeah. So I think that's something that we would take as they prep for their utilization reports, to have them address that, where we're at, where they're at, what they're looking at, and what that cost is, if it's come down, if there's ways to subsidize the cost, those type of things. If everyone's in agreement to that.
Sounds like there's support for, at the minimum, hearing from the plans about these options.
Maybe tying it together with the utilization claims experience, as well as where they think there could be some, what their expertise tells us we should really be driving in our communication or in considering for plan design.
And to Christy's note, you mentioned diabetes, kind of a bigger picture, you know, controlling diabetes is a chronic condition. We do have that actually as the third one listed there as well. And then going along with that, we have identified carrier resources for supporting obesity and diabetes.
Yeah, and they have those programs, so they can reiterate those. I mean, they're in the utilization reports year after year, so they...
I'm interested in the alternative care area. I have something to put in the chat that I encountered and find to be rather surprising. It has to do with diet and exercise, and specifically with multiple sclerosis, and a fellow who's been dealing with it for 25 years. I played golf with this guy 6 or 7 times in the last year, and I had no idea that he had MS. And has had it for 25 years. And so I just thought I'd share that. It has to do with, how do you address wellness? And how do you treat everybody with drugs? Or do you teach them, as, you know, was the idea of this diet program, to just avoid the things that are harmful.
So thank you, David. Would this be a question for the carriers on how they approach?
Well, it's about alternative care and how Well, I think the quote is in there from Edison that really sums it up, where he's talking about the doctor of the future will not be dispensing medicines, he'll be teaching people to maintain their health. And that's what he said back in 1903, and then we've gone the other way.
So in terms of alternative care, would you have a proposal in mind about how to address that within alternative care? Are you talking like naturopathy?
Well, yeah, the idea we've had and ensure alternative care benefits are available, and I think we need to maybe put a little more emphasis on that. And when we're talking about education and ways that we can help with diabetes and obesity and so forth, that maybe we need to be emphasizing this way that deals not so much with drugs, but with food and exercise and so forth.
Okay. Keith, anything you could add to this in this regard?
Well, I mean, that's kind of directing care, and everyone needs to decide what's kind of best for them and their alternative ways of thinking or thought. MS is a tough one, and that's going to be, again, up to the personal decision, because there are drugs that are pretty darn effective to treat it. I think it depends on severity, what someone's belief is. If they don't feel that traditional drugs, medication are working, or they haven't worked, so they look to another idea. But it's really, that would be directing medical care, which really comes down to an individual level. The provider's not going to tell you what to do. It's going to be your doctor provider. I mean, the carriers aren't going to do that, but it really is the treating physician and that relationship and those type of discussions and topics around it. And if they don't feel they're getting the treatment, then again, they need to look at alternative means, and maybe that's when they go the natural pathway or another. But there's always alternative care, and it's covered under acupuncture, chiro, naturopath, a bunch of different ways.
And it sounds a little bit like some of what David's talking to me about is also maybe health coaching as well. So what some of that education comes from.
Okay.
That's a nice idea to add, Jason, because I think that would be a really complementary approach. Because we've got resources within the plan, and bringing those forward to offer a more accessible suite of options for participants to look at and realize, if you kind of bundled them together, I don't know how we would do this, but there's health coaching, there's these kinds of things, there's alternative care, which includes Billy, I'm just going to say this because this was fun from last year, every week massage, now that the plan's just a thing. But there's a lot of different tools available. And David, what you're saying resonates with me as an individual. And I'm also thinking that within the plan itself, there are ways to do that. When we talk also around, that second to last bullet on mental health services, we can expand. That's one area. If there's somebody who needs clinical support, but there are also so many other levels of supportive care and preventive care that we all need, and it would bundle in there nicely in preventive care, supportive care. So maybe that's something that we can think about in terms of that, bringing some of that together with the resources and education kinds of things,
And Jennifer added some healthcare systems have navigators that include both allopathic medicine and complementary medicine. These are frequently centered around a specific medical condition, from my understanding.
And this actually kind of ties into, you know, our Get Connected, Stay Connected, Employee Engagement campaign as well, because, you know, we started the campaign with trying to get everyone to log in and create their username and password to, sorry, the employee, I'm going to have to call them back. getting connected with their account with Providence or Kaiser so that they can use that as a platform to find a primary care physician if they don't already have one, so that that primary care physician can steer them towards the appropriate resources and tools that we were just talking about that are, you know, for their own person, their personal circumstances, what have you. And so it's part of what we're trying to achieve with that.
It's funny, you guys jumped around everywhere, and I think you touched on all these points that we're just got here. So, Billy, you talked about the Get Connected, Stay Connected, you know, which is, you know, the develop and initiate an education campaign in collaboration with plan carriers targeting specific areas for improvement. I heard, Christy, I heard you talk about the mental health services, and then, yeah, you're talking about the alternative care as well. So, is there anything? Now, obviously, we're not in the draft renewal priorities part yet. We're just kind of reviewing what we had on here for last year. Anything else anybody wants to say about this before we go into break?
The only thing I would add, kind of off of what David was addressing there, is I think that both our Providence and Kaiser plans give us the tools to manage our healthcare in multiple ways, through naturopathic care, alternative care, and I guess modern medicine approach, whether it's you want to take a pill and try and fix your situation, or if you want to, get in weight loss programs or whatever the issue may be. So I think people, like you're saying, Billy, like, we just need to continue to encourage our folks to be their own advocate, gain as much knowledge and information as they can about what care they really have under their plans. And I think we have, you know, laid out some pretty good benefits for people. But a lot of folks don't realize what care is available to them, I think, still. So that's just kind of an add-on, I guess, to all of the discussion.
All right, thank you all. So what you just said really ties directly to what Jennifer was saying about connecting allopathic medicine and complementary medicine, really just highlighting folks that they don't have to choose one or the other. There may be hybrid systems, there may be ways that they can work together, and just educating folks that there are multiple options. Okay, well, now it really is time for break, unless there's anything else to add in that conversation. Give anybody a moment if you want to jump in. Okay, it's time for break, and we will be back. Let's see, it is 2:32 now, so 2:42 we'll be back. Okay, all right, thank you, folks. Okay, we're coming online here. Welcome back. All right. I don't know about the rest of you, but we've all maybe adjusted to the Zoom world. It might be interesting to have a hybrid world where some of us are on Zoom and some of us in person. That might be a totally new adjustment again, back to a different world. Welcome, folks. It did take a bit of a learning curve when we first started these Zoom meetings. The next thing on our agenda, Jason's going to share.
benefits and wellness report. And the first line item under that is communication timing, and then the second one, how to vary it, dependent coverage. Now, I think, Jason, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think that refers to the concern that Chris brought up about the timing of a communication around the beginning of the year. I don't know if Chris, are you with us yet?
Yeah, I don't see her yet, but yes, that is correct.
Okay,
that's what that's referring to.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so I just might give another minute for make sure that Chris is there, because I know she particularly wanted to hear.
Yes, exactly. We alternatively could talk about the second item first.
That's true. Yep. Okay. So let's see. Let me go ahead and pull up that second item. Let's see. Let me go ahead and share my screen here really quick.
Okay.
All right. So here we go. All right. So down. Sorry, I should have pulled this up first under plan details. So as a lot of you are aware, we have an out-of-area dependent coverage on our Providence plans. Now, this is a specific coverage that is for individuals who are out-of-area. This has come up in the past when we've had discussions about the personal option and individuals having, here it is, out of area dependent, individuals having dependents who are living out of state, like, you know, those going to school or you know, any child that's, you know, under age 26 that's on their plans, that's living somewhere else. So that's what this is. As you can see, you know, we've got like 20%, you know, cost associated with this coverage for really almost, you know, most of the benefits on this plan. And I'm bringing this to the BRC because I want to make you guys aware of a conversation I recently had with both a new employee as well as Providence directly in regards to this coverage. So basically, I had a new employee that had contacted me you know, about the area dependent coverage provided on the Providence plans. You know, they had a dependent who was living out of state, and they wanted clarification on, you know, how this coverage would apply in their situation. You know, and to be fair, I've always been, you know, a little bit, I guess confused might be the right word, as to why we have an out-of-area coverage option, since our plans already have a national network of providers, both Providence plans do. So covered employees, retirees, dependents should have no problem finding an in-network provider, no matter where they are in the country, unless they're, you know, living in the middle of nowhere. Then they're going to have problems finding no matter what plan they're on. In response to that, I was like, okay, I need to get an answer to this. So I went ahead and reached out to Stacy Ryback, which is one of our Providence contacts, to ask the question. I asked, you know, since our Providence plans have a national network of providers, when would a dependent be considered out of area? Wouldn't they just, you know, use a provider from the national network if they were outside of the Northwest and have coverage applied as usual, as if they're just regular in plan? And her response was, you know, I'll read her response. She says, "Hi, Jason, you are right. There is actually no membership under the out of area plans. When the county was fully insured, they had to have an out of area plan for the geographies outside of Oregon, because we, that being Providence, are filed in the state of Oregon. So for self-insured plans, the county owns the plan. Therefore, we don't have those geographic limitations anymore, you know, which is why we can have a national network." And she goes on to say, "I think these plans should be phased out." So I'm bringing this, or we're bringing this to the committee, because it may not be necessary to maintain this coverage. And
it is a point of confusion for employees. So, you know, if the committee's in favor of exploring this more, we could ask Providence to speak about this during their April presentation. So, yeah, I just wanted to mention that. Does anybody have any thoughts about that? Does this sound like something we want to have Providence talk about to determine, does it make sense to have this coverage anymore?
Yeah, so for folks just joining us, we're jumping to the second point about out-of-area coverage for, I would imagine, a lot of college age students. I know I do. This is a question about what to do with this kind of coverage. So, Keith, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I was just going to add, one of the things that that Providence touted was their partnership with Cigna, which expanded their reach even greater for out-of-network coverage, to Jason's point. So that was part of the reason they partnered with Cigna, was to expand their reach even greater than what it was. So to his point, it'd be very unlikely or rare to ever not have coverage under the Providence plan. Just wanted to add that point.
Other questions or thoughts? It sounds like this is specific to Providence, not necessarily to Kaiser. Jason, yeah, okay. Other questions or thoughts about this point?
Yeah, the Kaiser plans, you must, you know, get service in, you know, the Northwest District.
Did we cover communication timing while I was out by chance?
We did not yet, Chris. We wanted to make sure you were in there.
Thank you. I had a customer ringing the bell at the front counter over here wanting the voting parking pass, so.
We knew that you wanted to talk about that, so we jumped ahead just to the next point.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. So David suggests make it simple by eliminating it. So that was on this point, this second point, about how to vary dependent coverage, so make it simple. That's one suggestion. I would imagine this would need a formal motion and a vote for this.
Yeah, and I would recommend that we, you know, get more information from Providence, you know, have them talk about it during their, you know, their, you know, April, you know, presentation, so that we can make sure we're not missing anything, you know, before we decide to get rid of it.
I see some nods from Dave and other folks. I think I saw you. Any other suggestions around this from the committee?
I apologize for missing the first part of this discussion, but what would make us want to eliminate this coverage when we have kids that could be just over in Vancouver going to school, but there's, I don't know, does that constitute out of area? I don't know.
Yeah, and that's where that whole, you know, this whole question came from, is, you know, an employee, you know, contacted me because they had a individual who was out of area. And the issue is, you know, we technically don't have an out of area because, you know, we have the Cigna network that Providence uses that expands to the entire United States. Mm-hmm. You know, I had asked Providence the question, you know, well, since we have a national network anyways, does it make even sense for us to have this additional lower, you know, amount of coverage, because it's 20% out-of-pocket cost in most cases for the out-of-area dependent. Does it make sense to even have that, since really they, you know, we have a national network, they can find an in-network provider, no problem, wherever they are, as long as they're not in the boonies. You know, is that just confusing to employees? You know, Providence basically came back and said, yeah, that's true. We actually don't even have anybody currently, you know, enrolled as an out-of-network dependent at this time. And then there was some history behind that with, you know, this being a coverage that we were required to have at one point when we were fully insured. But now that we're self-insured and we can have that broader network of providers outside of Oregon, you know, it's kind of doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But like I said, I think it would be important to hear a little bit more from Providence to make sure we're not missing anything.
Got it. That makes sense.
Yeah, and you added the point that it's lower coverage. That's interesting that it's lower coverage than True Cigna.
And for ads, might it save plan costs to simplify the plan? Some of this might be about cost as well. How do we ensure employees covering out of area understand it's not a takeaway if we eliminate the benefit? Yeah, so being really clear, this is actually potentially helping people who may misunderstand their benefits. So it sounds like there's support at least asking the question of Providence to help the group make some decisions. Sounds like that's a good idea as far as the group's concerned, unless there's somebody else who has a different suggestion around this. Okay, and so from that could be a formal motion and second, and then the team will decide, but there could be implications about how to communicate about this kind of change, as Jennifer suggests as well. Okay, good. Anything more you need on that one, Jason? Is that pretty clear?
No, I think, as long as Mercer's got that and can pass that information on to Providence, that we want to hear more about that.
Yes. Is that clear, Keith?
It is.
Okay. All right. So the next item is the communication timing under the benefits and wellness report. And as I pointed out, Chris, when you were here, I know that was connected to your email and the concern that came up around that. And I did hear some of that as well from other folks. So this is about that communication timing. And Jason, were you going to talk about that?
Yes. Yeah, I'll go ahead and talk about that. So yeah, as everybody said, as you recently saw, we sent out a communication to EA and asked the employees about the employee contribution impacts associated with ongoing contract negotiations. And and just to start off, we are absolutely fully aware that the timing of that notification was not ideal, especially given the impact to employees. As you saw, we were asked to explain, why was this notification sent out, at the time that it was and not at an earlier date. So I just kind of wanted to, go ahead.
Yeah, remind us, Jason, when it did come out, because I recall seeing it, but it was the beginning of the year, correct?
Yeah, let me look at my notes here really quick. Let's see.
On the last work day of the year.
we sent notification to the BRC.
To the BRC members.
Yes, correct.
And then, the 3rd of January, I think, was the date it was distributed to everyone across the county.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. So our first hint that these union contracts might not be settled before the end of the year came on December 1st. At that time, we were contacted by Employee Labor and Relations with a request to, and when I say we, I'm talking about the Benefits and Wellness Division. We were contacted by Employee Labor and Relations with a request to provide detail on the employee cost impacts in case the union contracts were not settled before the end of the year, so that union leadership could be made aware of what those impacts would be. However, we've still had the belief that contracts could potentially be ratified before the end of the year, so we didn't take any action at that time. Now, we worked with Employee Labor and Relations, as well as Mercer, beginning that same day to obtain the requested information, and we were able to present the final numbers to Employee Labor and Relations on Friday, December 3rd, so a couple days later. So 2 weeks after that, we followed up with Employee and Labor Relations, so that would be Friday, December 17th. We followed up to determine, if there were, if there was still a chance that contracts were going to be settled before the end of the year. And it was at that time that Employee and Labor Relations notified us, no, this isn't going to happen before the end of the year. The following Monday, because, it was a Friday, so the following Monday, December 20th, we started the process of developing union, BRC, and employee communications, updating documents, implementing the necessary system changes, There's a lot of behind the scenes work that needed to happen. On December 28th, which is 8 calendar days later, but only 4 working days later, due to the Christmas holiday, we had completed the development of those communications, which included getting stakeholder reviews. So, we had different people on the benefits team reviewing it. We had workforce data management involved. We had employee labor and relations reviewing. And we had also, updated some of the documents and did a lot of that work to set up the, that system set up for the different rates starting with the first January paycheck. We got final sign off and preparation for that communication completed kind of late in the day on December 28th. So we sent the initial communication to the BRC and the union leadership that following day, December 29th. And we wanted to give the BRC and union leadership a couple of days to provide feedback before we sent it out to all employees, just in case there was a big miss in the communication that we sent out, so that we could get that corrected before it actually ended up in employees' inboxes, which is why we sent it out a few days later on January 3rd. So like I said, obviously, this is definitely not ideal timing. Our goal is always to provide such communications, of course, accurately and timely. While there are certainly some things that are out of our control, one thing that we have done to help facilitate timely communication around changes associated with contract negotiations is to assign a benefits team member to track the progress of contract negotiations as part of our annual benefit renewal project plan. So that's something that we're going to be doing to try and mitigate these kinds of situations from happening again.
Yeah, so it's like I said, it sounds like the timing wasn't ideal, but I can only imagine even on benefits and the staffing at that time of year, that must have been a challenging circumstance. So Chris, you raised a concern about the timing, about seeing that at the end of the year. Could you say a little bit about what your concern was, just to help us understand what the impact was?
Well, sure. I take ownership in the sense that this happened 3 years ago as well, and I did not think about it, I guess, and did not, have a discussion with my union representatives and forewarn them that this is what we were facing. My side of it is the communication, at least from our union group, was that the last meeting in December was early in the month, I believe, as far as the negotiation meetings, and they didn't have anything else scheduled until the first part of the year. So we knew early December that things were not going to move forward and that we probably would not be having a contract ratified. But I guess, as a BRC member, I feel like, our purpose is to keep these benefits within that 5% increase range every single year. We know what the intent is when we set out to develop our plans and manipulate our plans so that we keep these cost increases within that 5% range every year. I think we also know that our contract language is such that it speaks to what we all know as a traditional 95-5 split. And I also recognize that as a BRC member, we have guidelines and that we cannot influence how things are funded or paid and all those things. But I feel that it's unfortunate that now this is the second contract negotiation that I recall. There could have been others that I'm just not recalling, but this is the second one, basically two times in a row, that we've gotten in this situation. And like I don't know, I kind of felt thrown under the bus as a BRC member because I'm representing, you know, 200 and some employees through the DTD, AFSCME, and BRC or BCS contract. And, you know, to have it come out kind of last minute like that, I was like, oh my gosh, I completely forgot that this was a possibility. And now here everybody's going to be facing additional costs beginning of the year for their plans. I'm glad to hear that, like, benefits is looking at how they can be more involved and be more aware of where things are at with contract negotiations. I would ask, I guess, that Eric Sarah's at least here on mute, that as our chief negotiator for the county, that you work with our benefits team and keep them informed. And the other thing is, I would just encourage the county to begin negotiations much sooner than what we historically begin. And I don't know why it's so hard for us to get that process underway so we don't end up in this situation. Because we all know our contract, our labor agreements are coming to an end June 30th of whatever year it is. And yet we don't begin our negotiations until May. So it's difficult from that standpoint. And I think it's unfortunate that we continue to put our represented members in this situation. The non-reps don't have a financial impact from what I recall. So it is only impacting the represented staff. And I just feel like, you know, it's unfortunate that as BRC members, we work hard to develop plans and, you know, contain costs, and we have a goal, and we manipulate our plans so that we can stay within that 5% increase, and then we end up in a situation like this. So I just would encourage county leadership to work hard in the future so that we don't get in this situation.
Sure. So, Chrissy, yeah, so I definitely hear what you're saying. The impact this had, it sounds like, on people you represent and on you thinking about this. And I definitely hear you have a message for folks in these negotiations, however, you know, acknowledging that the BRC isn't part of that, right? Not about passing on information and helping people to remember that this is a potential impact. And some of this is about communication, right? This, the primary issue here is about communication and how it's communicated. I'm wondering if other folks have requests about these kinds of things, about how these. Oh, and I see, Eric, you have your hand up as well. and I'm also interested in hearing how other folks' suggestion around these things being communicated, especially within the BRC.
Can I go?
Absolutely.
All right. So, you know, thank you, Chris, for, you know, that information. But I wanted to add just some clarification to it. So we started negotiations, at least with the CCEA, on February 26th of 2021. So it wasn't May. And obviously, with, you know, I can't go into details related to negotiations. This is not the setting for that. But it's both parties working collectively together to reach a mutual agreement. With the, you know, the situation that we're in today has happened historically. Like, this county has never, with the exception to FAPO, which happened last year, ever settled a contract before the expiration date or the crossover to following January. Never. 3 years ago, well now 4 years ago, because the county was the employees were going to experience, you know, a significant out-of-pocket increase due to the contracts being status quo, the parties reached mutual agreement through MOA to adopt only sign tentative agreements on those articles. That was not an option this go around. Last time under the current contract.
Sure. So thank you, Eric. Can I jump in, Eric, just for a moment? I realized that you were asked. Your name was mentioned, and I realized you were responding to this. My concern is this might be out of the scope of the BRC at this moment.
No, I understand that, but I just wanted to provide some clarification without getting into the details of actually bargaining as to what happened and what happened this time. But everybody knows, or everybody should know what happens with once we reach a status quo environment.
Yeah. So thank you.
Plenty of benefits.
So thank you. Yes. So I appreciate the information. And what is within the scope of the BRC is certainly the communication that goes between HR to the membership, right? To the membership of the BRC. And like you said, Jason, you wanted to pass this message on so the BRC members could look at these messages and make sure that when they go out to the entire employee all the employees, that we have eyes on it, that the BRC has eyes on it in advance. So it certainly sounds like Chris's one request is that it go out as earlier, which Chris, you're acknowledging that. And you're also hearing, Chris, that Jason is pointing out that there's going to be a staff member assigned to follow the negotiations, and maybe next time what would happen differently is that if there was a December deadline, it's looking like negotiations aren't going to happen, there'd be those kind of messages come out a little bit earlier. Is that or maybe a lot earlier? I don't know what's feasible. Sounds like there's a lot of steps because it sounds like a lot has to happen in order for these messages to happen, but sounds like it's going to come out earlier.
Yeah, I think the goal is, if we can, do a better job of, having eyes on to, exactly, okay, when do we know that we're not going to have contracts settled? Once we know that, we've confirmed it's not going to happen, then, that's when we can start moving forward to, provide communication.
Okay.
Yeah, and like I said, it slipped off my radar too, and it sounds like it kind of did as far as the benefit group too, to labor reaching out, asking about the amounts and so forth. So I think we just all need to, make mental notes and, do what we can to minimize the impacts as we move to the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it impacted a lot of folks. Not to mention the staff that probably had to work on winter break, maybe, or on vacations and things like that.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I acknowledge how much work all these changes and the craziness of it all, what that does to you guys and the benefits team. And I mean, you all work super hard and do a tremendous job and helping us through all kinds of situations with our benefits. So I appreciate that and acknowledge that for sure.
Thank you, Chris. Yes, thank you. So I'm tracking the time as well. So I noticed Christy has her hand up, and Jennifer had a suggestion as well. So Christy?
So yeah, thanks, Chris, for bringing this forward. And I think that this is just tricky because we are trying to navigate between, we are HR practitioners on one side, and there's contract negotiation. So there's a role that we play there that's very specific in what we do share and when we share and with whom we share. And then there's our role as BRC members. And so it's tricky. So I think one of the things that I'm wondering about is, if, as Eric said, it's never happened, then maybe an option, just tossing it out there, that there's always going to be some kind of crossover, that there's some kind of caveat language that we just are bringing forward when we're doing our rates, at least in our meetings, right, in August. If there's, every contract can be a little bit different, right? So the rules in the contract that say what will happen if there isn't a successor contract in place by X period of time can be different. So we really can't say will provide this specific information. So I'm just wondering if we just toss it in there as something that, and we have continued to work behind the scenes with employee and labor relations. It's not that this was missed. It's just that we have a process in place that didn't contemplate this nuanced piece, right? That's what's going on here. And so we want to get that information as soon as it's ready to be released. And because we're not going to release that outside of the contract negotiations process, if we just have that little, when we're finalizing rates, it's kind of like we did before. It's like it's there in front of everybody that the non-represented rates are right there when we're talking with Mercer. They're always there from the very beginning, but we forgot about that, right? Some people weren't noticing that, and then there was the surprise when they realized, wait, there's a different impact between the represented and the non-represented. And that was several years ago. Chris, you may be the only person here besides us that remembers that. But it's the same kind of thing, right? There are other impacts. So maybe we just put it on there as a, yeah, remember that thing does happen. So any of you who have contracts that are open, just a reminder to talk with your union representatives to consider, should there be an unexecuted contract at the end of the year, what'll happen? And start asking that question, right? And then that could come to us through the appropriate channels of a request from the union to say, you know, in August or September, hey, what would those rates look like if we don't settle this contract? Then that would go through the appropriate channels, and you get that information way ahead. We, as a benefits team, we get that information way ahead. And then we're ready to go, depending if it goes left or right, right? So maybe that's a process step we could add in that keeps us all in our right lanes, but also helps with flexing to the changing environment. What do you think, Chris? I want to just check in with you since you brought this forward. How does that sound?
I think that's a great idea, but I would just take it a step further, of course, and encourage our county and our unions to settle before we ever get in this situation.
We'll assume
that's the best world scenario.
Yes. You know what, Chris? Having that request for data from the union earlier could influence bargaining. It's a piece of information that could be impactful.
Sure.
So those are my thoughts.
So thank you. And tracking the time, and Jennifer noted, also pointing out the boundaries around this, around what this is.
Christy answered my question. There's a specific way that it has to work so that we're not unfairly pressuring anyone. Those are my words, not Eric's. I know that the language ends. There's a lot of specificity around this that is very complicated. Just want to make sure people have information and are warned about costs so they can make the appropriate benefit choices ahead of time if we get in a situation.
Yes, absolutely. Because there are real world consequences for our employees. That's so great.
Right. And then I guess I'll add, and I think we were going to maybe touch on this, is that there were impacts and possible shifts that folks made in benefit plans, as well as kind of, for lack of a better word, fallout from this situation, right?
Jason, you're nodding.
Yeah. So, yeah, Chris, you asked me to get those numbers. Sorry, I'm hearing my echo. Christy, thank you, Christy. She's right. She's like right there, so that's why I said that twice. Because it was a significant cost change to the employee, it was considered a qualifying event for employees to be able to make changes to their benefits in an appropriate way. So we did have a few employees that did decide to take us up on that, 11 in total, 9 of them from the EA, 1 from AskMe West, and 1 from AskMe CCOM that made plan changes. And all of those plan changes, people were starting with the Providence open option, and they were either switching to the Providence personal option or Kaiser. So they were going to a lesser plan, basically, from the open option. I just wanted to get those numbers out there because I know that those were asked for as well.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for gathering that information. It's just data to
have, I guess, as far as what the impact was. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So this was an important conversation, and just tracking the time a little bit, we're getting close to the end of our time. There is, if there's anything else to add to that, you can certainly add, but there is a moment now for us to talk about our member reports, anything you've heard from your members, people you represent. This is one that I know that sometimes people have a lot to say about and sometimes not. Hey, Gretchen, you're about to speak.
Nothing necessarily specific to the plans, but is there anybody from wellness here today?
We're all from wellness.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had a member bring up to me about a week ago the Oregon Trail walking thing. They said that they've submitted their stuff twice and never heard anything back after completing it, so I just wanted to follow up on that.
It was tougher on the trail than they expected, it sounds like. Okay. Yeah. So Jillian can look into that, and if you could, okay. Gretchen, just message Jillian directly and let her know who the individual is, and then she can follow up on that.
Perfect. Thank
Thanks
you.
For bringing that forward.
Yep, that's all I had.
Other member reports?
Yeah, we're really curious to hear if you guys heard anything from your members about, how did open enrollment go? Are people receiving the changes that, were made? Have you heard anything about that? With like the alternative care, the maximum is going away, but, per visit limit being put in place, anything that you guys heard back from your employees would be helpful.
I will just say that I represent a very small group of people, and I have not heard anything, so no news is good news in my mind. Thank you.
So this is a reminder to keep your ears out for that kind of information, right? So as these changes roll out, and over the past year there have been some changes with alternate care and vision, maybe some folks are still learning about that, but as you hear things, it's a good opportunity to bring back to the group to let people know how that impacts folks. Anything else on member reports?
I have a question for the represented folks. I'm wondering, we talked before the pandemic about providing kind of just a quick summary that you could message out to your members about, like, these are the changes kind of thing. You watch for these benefits. You can have up to X number of visits, plus we've added this for your vision. I just don't know how you message it. That's up to you all how you message it. But it just made me wonder if there's an opportunity there. And then it's almost like you could have a check back in. Because what we hear on the back end, often later, sometimes like in July, somebody realizes that there was a change that they knew nothing about because they weren't maybe tracking that, right? And we can't track for everybody, but it just makes me wonder. It's just like an additional conversation that it might mean more coming from you, and they might not necessarily listen when we send something out.
Yeah, I'd very much like to have that kind of a summary.
So David, that sounds like a request for some kind of summary to be able to pass along. Is that likely? Just is that possible?
I think it should be pretty quick and easy because we end up developing it for open enrollment communication. So we get that. It's just putting it in your hands, and you're helping support that messaging.
Great. So who would be providing that?
I can add that to the project plan.
Yeah, great. It's basically just a CC to the BRC, right? Do with this information as, what you will.
Great. Sounds like that takes care of what you're requesting there, David.
Jason, tell me if that's not, if that's too big of an app, right? Is it as easy as I'm thinking? Okay.
Yeah, because we are developing those communications anyway. So, we're putting information on the website. We're developing emails. And we're highlighting, what all those changes are. We're really breaking them down. So it's easy for us just to say, hey, here's a summary of changes and pass it on to you so you can distribute it however makes the most sense for you.
Okay. Anything more on that point? We have very brief amount of time, but the last thing is about draft 23 renewal priorities. And I for some reason, when I was looking at the 22 renewal priorities, I thought that was referring to our discussion for this year, but that actually was referring to last year's renewal. 2023 is this year's renewal. So that was my misunderstanding. You probably are really clear on what this is all about. So for this year, 2023 priorities, we don't have a whole lot of time. So Jason, was this you as well?
Yeah, I mean, I can take the lead on that. It's basically we're starting to look at, okay, you know, what are we going to want to address going forward? And we're super early in the process. These renewal priorities, what we want to focus on this year, what kind of plan changes we might be looking at, if any, is going to change over time. But it's always good to have kind of a starting point. These are things that are important to us, and things that we want to think about as we move forward this year and planning for the 2023 renewals. So I know I just copied and pasted what we had for 2022 over into 2023, and I know we already addressed this. So I think, am I correct in guessing that we're fine in taking this off of there?
Please don't take it off. I would rather we add something to it, which is monitor. And we should monitor it for the next couple of years so that we can see some trends in the claims to determine whether we should make a change, either expanding it or, you know, something else.
Is there something we could add into the language? Is it just point out that was part of 2022 or an agreement?
Yeah.
To be clear.
Yeah, but like be its own section where it's been completed and now we're monitoring it, like you said, as opposed to it's something we're still working on.
It could just be a section that's monitor previous plan changes, : sub-bullets, 2022 renewal, change this, you know, because over time, we want to see these over a couple of plan years, right? So it'll get really confusing. So maybe there's just a section about monitoring. Yep,
because otherwise that
jump in on that
upper section is going to get very busy.
Yeah. So we, and then Jason, I'm assuming you could just plug in, instead of maybe that, you could even take the summary that we sent out in open enrollment, right? And just put that stuff right there. Might make it easier. Yep. Yeah, we can put that in there.
Jason, you're flexibly adapting as we speak here.
He's so good, yep.
Your work in front of us, that's awesome. Okay, any other questions or suggestions around 2023 draft renewals? As Jason's pointed out, it's early in the year, but it's good to start having these conversations as early as possible. We know that sometimes we've had past years where these conversations almost come up a little bit too late in the process. Not necessarily, there's never too late, but it's probably earlier than later is better.
I still think these are totally relevant as far as having a chronic condition, some key chronic condition that we're monitoring that we know is impactful, that also is driving costs, and has a quality of life element to the people in our plan. So I like the idea of having, if it's diabetes, it's diabetes. There's a chronic condition element to it that we're monitoring. And then I think the mental health piece should always be there. There's some things that I think we should just, this is me, high level. We might drill down depending on what we're seeing, but, you know, chronic condition could be a category. And what we're going to look at for the next 5 years is we're going to look at 4 years, 3 years, something, diabetes and accessibility to care, any barriers to care. It's cost prohibitive. It's difficult to get test strips because you already got a prescription for the 30 days and now there's a change and now you can't get them. We all know those stories. People are cutting their test strips and whatever. These things are happening. So I think of it in more of those kind of framing areas. There's a physical health and there's a mental health and overall well-being that hopefully wraps around both of those.
Yeah, and speaking of chronic conditions, I think David added MS as another consideration to think about. I'm not sure how many folks are dealing with that in our group, but it sounds like it's a consideration. So, other suggestions for the 2023 year? Jennifer?
Do we had psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis show up in our large claims this last year. Do we want to add those as a group, or do we want to target those that have those, or maybe talk about the injectable medications that are so expensive? I don't know which is more appropriate to monitor.
Carrying over from the large claims conversation, yes. I see some nods. Folks think that might be a good idea to do something with that. Or,
I know Mercer said that they were going to be talking with the carriers also and try to get some of that information. That might actually help inform this conversation.
How much of it is medication? How much of it is other treatment?
Maybe I don't know how to spell it.
We really are putting you on the spot here, Jason.
I think I might have gotten it. I don't know.
Suggested change.
Not sure how you want me to phrase that. Do you guys have any suggestions?
Claims. You just say, yeah. That's probably good enough.
Okay. All right. Other suggestions. It is 3:29. We probably have time for one more if somebody wants to speak up, and then we'll close. No. Okay. All right. Well, thank you all for your flexibility and jumping in and making this Zoom process work, as tricky as it sometimes is. And, you know, and even having tricky conversations. I appreciate the folks are handling these things and talking about them and taking ownership and being straight clear about what's going on. I appreciate that. All right. So we will see you again all in a month. I appreciate your participation and see you soon.
Thank you all. Great to see you again.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.